We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Knicks fans, how you doing? It's your boy Jonathan Macri with you for another episode of the Knicks Film School Podcast, coming at you on a Monday after a long Thanksgiving weekend in which the Knicks started off not so good and finished off pretty darn good. We come to you obviously celebrating how the Knicks finished off the weekend with the Hawks win. We're going to talk a lot about that and all the ins and outs of that game, but we also come to you with a bit of a heavy heart because, as I introduced my wonderful co-host, Jeremy Cohen, I also do so with much thanks and praise and admiration for him for even showing up and recording this podcast today. And on that note, I will turn it over to you, Jeremy, and ask, how are you doing?
Thanks, John. Been better. It's been tough. I lost my grandfather on Thanksgiving morning, and it just hasn't been the easiest few days, for sure. You know, I've been really blessed to spend as much time with him as I have. You know, he's going to be 97 in a few weeks and survived COVID, multiple cancer scares, nearly drowned, almost got into a plane crash. I mean, like he basically had 9 lives, and he was just a really special person who I cared about deeply, and he cared about me. And you know, he was so influential in terms of my education and learning. When I was in high school, he had me print out a list of SAT words, and he told me to memorize them. And for each word that I got correctly and their definitions, he would give me a quarter. And I thought I was ripping him off, but I'm sure he'd say it was some of the easiest money he'd ever spend. So he was a wonderful man. I'm going to miss him a ton. And
And we will do this episode in his honor. Because it will be I think by and large a happy episode, in which we are pretty positive. And you know, he sounds like a guy who was absolutely a positive influence on pretty much everybody he was around, and I am thankful very much that he helped turn you into the fine young man that you have become, and specifically that he did that exercise with those SAT words, because your many wonderful qualities, the wisdom that you spout and the verbiage that you use to spout that wisdom is probably, I mean, it's up there amongst your many great qualities, I have to say.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Perhaps only outdone by your prediction abilities. And thus far this season, you entered this week undefeated in predicting every one of the Knicks' outcomes this week. We are, of course, going to start with the week in review, but I'm going a little backwards because that week in review includes the Knicks going 2-1, which means, yes, I finally got my first W on the board. I won the predictions this week. which I know you're happy about, because it means that the Knicks went 2-1 instead of 1-2, which you unfortunately predicted, which means you lose. Just want to throw that out there.
Yeah, you are such a smug little asshole, but I love it. Listen, again, I'm happy the Knicks went 2-1. I'll gladly take this L, but wow, to hoist this to the top. I'm going to remember this the next time I am back in the win column, and you're not even going to get a more than 3 words out. You're going to be like, "Hey there, Knicks." And I'm going to be like, "Whoa, what's up, everybody? Guess who won this week?" And that's basically what
you
do. Like,
that's what I would do.
That's what you just did, basically. So
I have so little. So this week they went 2-1, obviously, by starting out beating the Lakers in a game I know you were at. That was your first Knicks win of the season, not preseason, right?
It was the first Knicks win of the season or postseason that I've been in the building for since before COVID.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize it had been that long.
Well, I didn't see that many. I saw a playoff game. Yeah. And then a couple games this year. And I think the last one might've been the Bobby Portis game or a win against the Cavs. One of the two. So
okay,
it's been a while.
But it was a good win. And it seemed like a necessary win at the time, just like the Hawks win seemed like necessary win. Every win these days for the Knicks seems like a necessary win and a needed win. And like one they absolutely have to have, which is interesting for a team that is still, even though the way we talk about it, it doesn't feel like it sometimes, 11-9, and they're 2 games over 500. And I checked this morning, they've beaten, of the top 14 net rating teams in the league, they've beat half of them, which is pretty good. They've also had some bad losses. Obviously, they got blown out against Phoenix, but I feel like the only appropriate way to start our discussion of the team this week is with the guy who was not there for Saturday night's win, and that is Kemba Walker. So Kemba Walker coming off of, I thought, a pretty decent game on offense against the Suns. Don't forget there was a little flurry there in the third quarter where it looks like the Knicks might make a game of it. Walker scored 10 of the Knicks' 13 points during that stretch. I think he hit a 3 or 2. He had a nice drive. He was, just looking okay. He sat out this one on the second half of a back-to-back for rest. And is it a coincidence that the Knicks put forth, it wasn't the lowest point total, I don't think they've given up this year. Well, maybe it was. Whatever. They held what had been the best offense in the league by a mile in their previous 7 games. Obviously, the Hawks were on a 7-game winning streak. They held them to 90 points. Obviously, there were some missed shots in there, but also there was some great defense played, none more so than by Emmanuel Quickley, who took a large part of Walker's minutes. It was just a different, feel out there. So I will bring it back to you. What are your impressions from this game and from the week that we had?
It's a great question because, the absence of Kemba Walker felt louder than him playing. And granted, the last time the Knicks didn't play Kemba Walker, they lost by, I think, 17 to the Cavs. Yes. But when you look back at that game as well, it's like Ricky Rubio went 8 of 9 from 3.
Yeah.
The Cavs as a whole went, I think, 53% from deep. The Knicks shot terribly. Granted, then you look at this game where the Knicks didn't even shoot that well. At least from 3, from the field, they were fine. But then the Hawks, outside of Trae Young, I think they were like 4 of 17 from downtown. You could look at both things and be like, well, if this team hadn't shot as many or if this team shot better, it doesn't matter. It kind of evens out in the end. But it backs up what the eye test seemingly is and a lot of the analytics as well, which is that this is a team that needs to, sooner than later, maybe stop starting Elf.
Oh man.
Wow. That's
Freud.
But I want to make a point here because it's not the same in the sense of this.
Listen,
Kemba Walker is still a rotation caliber player. It's just compared to where he was and where he's at now, in that context, he's cooked. In general, he's not. He can find a decent role in the rotation. It's just not as a starting lead guard. His ability to spot up and pull up, That's still there, right? Like, he can do things with the ball. He can't orchestrate a starting offense. And we know that the lineup that's been played, the third most in the NBA, and when I say orchestrate an offense, I mean specifically a starting offense, or starting lineup. the Knicks starting lineup, generally speaking, is now the third most played, and it's still in the toilet. And I don't think we can say one game, you know, makes all the difference, but I think it certainly tells a very fascinating story, and it shows that maybe either removing Kemba or at least giving him a different role, it's not the solution, but it certainly is a solution. And it maybe cleans some things up, because when you look at some of the numbers with Kemba on and other players on, it's not great. And then when you look at guys like Evan Fournier and Julius Randle, with each of them on and then Kemba Walker off, the numbers just flip all the way around. And it's the sort of thing where it's awkward, because I don't see the Knicks just dealing Kemba Walker. I think there's certainly more empathy there. There has to be this. I understand it's a business, and I'm totally fine with the idea of considering trading him. But it's the sort of thing where, how realistic is this going to be? Because of the fact that we saw the Austin Rivers situation, but it's different. It's not the same as Austin Rivers.
I agree.
So it's kind of like, if you're making a deal, at what point do you say, hey, we made a big deal about this. You came home, you're respected, you're loved by your teammates. I just think there's more to be weighed in this context. But if it's at the detriment to how the team is playing, and at the end of the day, Leon Rose and the front office care more about wins, I would hope, than appeasing Kemba Walker, how you kind of work around that. Because it's not an easy solution, even though we might think it is. There's more to it than that, especially in the locker room.
I completely agree. And I thought Seth Partnow, who Knicks fans have not been happy about at times in the past because of his ranking of a certain RJ Barrett, who, by the way, had a very nice game against Atlanta. Probably, I would say, his best overall game he's had in a while.
Which isn't saying much, but it was quality.
It was a quality game, which we'll take it. Shout out to Andrew Claudio and his Prize Picks entry. Partnow's thread. It was basically like the Knicks brought in these pieces on offense to try to make Julius Randle's life easier. And not quite that the opposite has happened, but like, it hasn't made his life easier. He's taking slightly more tough shots. He's hitting, you know, contested threes and contested shots generally at like a slightly worse rate than last year. Not like much, much worse, but slightly worse. And that has made a big difference. And then it feels like, to me, it's impossible to talk about Kemba. Like, to me, the reason why I've kind of been, I guess, on an island at this point, I don't know who the hell else would be on. I don't even know if I'm on the island anymore. The reason why I've defended Kemba Walker throughout the course of this year is because I feel like there has been a segment of the fan base that it's like, it's Kemba's fault. If you get Kemba out of there, everything's going to be fine. And I think there is a certain logic to that. But I also feel like it's impossible to talk about Kemba Walker without talking about Julius Randle in conjunction, because it's the two of them that have not worked together. And honestly, here's the thing. We've seen Kemba have stretches where he's looked good, right? He had one against Phoenix. He had one against his old team, the Hornets. He's now led the team in scoring, I think, four times this year in 20 games, which doesn't sound like a lot, but like, I don't know, considering how many guys put the ball in the basket on this team, I feel like it's a decent number. He could still do it, which is why I'm interested. You said like, he's not a guy that's capable of running a starting offense. I wonder, actually, I don't know what the answer to this question is, but like, if you gave him a good team, right? A good solid team full of guys who were comfortable in secondary roles, right? Like here's an interesting one. If you put Obi Toppin as last year's starting power forward on last year's version of the Knicks, and you put this version of Kemba Walker in place of Elfrid Payton last year, and it was Walker, Barrett, Bullock, Obi, and Mitchell Robinson owns the wall, whichever center. How many games does that team win? Are they a 500 team?
I don't think it's 41.
I don't think it's 41 either, because no. I don't think we believe that Kemba Walker, this version of Kemba Walker, is capable of being an All-NBA second team caliber player. Mm-hmm. But I also think we see enough spurts from Kemba where, on offense at least, I think he's shown the ability to be 85% of like maybe not all NBA third team Kemba Walker, but like 85-90% of like vague peak Kemba Walker, which is, again, as a very long-winded way of saying, to put this all on Kemba, I think, is a little bit unfair. The synergy with Julius has not happened. There is no synergy. Whatever has happened is the opposite of synergy. But at the same, and just to drive that point home, we were talking about it before we started recording, as it were, the two of them together on the court have a negative 13.5 net rating via both NBA stats page and Cleaning the Glass. Amongst, I'll ask you a different trivia question now. Amongst 107 two-man pairings who have played at least 400 minutes together, where do you think that ranks?
With Randall and Walker?
Randall and Walker at negative 13.5. Again, amongst 107 two-man pairings who have played at least 400 minutes together as of the time we're recording this.
I'm going to say something like 99.
A little bit lower. It's 104. And the three that are lower are lineups that belong to Detroit, Oklahoma City, and Houston. And joining them in the 9, joining them in the bottom nine is another OKC lineup, another Houston lineup, or another combo, another OKC combo, and then two more New York Knicks combos. And those two New York Knicks combos are Kemba Walker and Evan Fournier, and Kemba Walker and RJ Barrett. So there is a common name, which again goes completely against the point that I am making. However, here's the other thing. As I know you know this because I think we've talked about it, Kemba Walker has played 17 possessions this year without Julius Randle. We don't have a sample size of what Kemba Walker looks like without Julius Randle on the floor. And what was interesting about the Hawks game is Randle getting his first chance to play without Kemba and perhaps to show, hey, I could still be the old Julius. What did Julius Randle do? He scored under 10 points, couldn't make a field goal, played good defense, made some really nice passes. But for only the second time in his Knick career now, Julius Randle has scored in single digits for two games in a row. I don't know what to take from that other than one other stat I'll throw at you, and then I'd love to hear your thoughts. So Julius Randle, you mentioned, you know, when he doesn't play with Walker, it's a lot better. Knicks are plus 8.7 per 100, according to Cleaning the Glass, with a really good defense and a slightly better than average offense. No Julius Randle, no Kemba Walker, again, via Cleaning the Glass, plus 19.7 in almost 500 possessions with a 119.5 offensive rating and a 99.8 defensive rating. They are a markedly better team on offense without Julius Randle in there this year. And again, those are against backups. I get it. And the defense is a little bit better as well. This is where we are. I don't know what conclusion to draw from all of this other than that, like, things are clearly not working in terms of the starting unit. And I don't know that there's an easy, where the easy pivot is, because to me, I don't know that it's as simple as moving Kemba Walker to the bench or just putting Kemba Walker in mothballs and sending him on his way.
I think you at least have to start considering him at least to the bench before you take him out of the rotation completely. And the thing is with Tibbs, I mean, how many times are we calling for Tibbs to do something about the starting lineup last season? And he didn't. He was consistent about it. Yeah. So it's a sort of thing where unless this really works, and we have a one game sample size of the lineup we saw last night working, does that mean it can't work? No, it could absolutely work moving forward.
Which lineup are you talking about? Basically Burks
instead of Kemba and keeping everyone else.
Yes.
So maybe that is the factor. Maybe just swapping one out for the other. I know a lot of fans also want Emmanuel Quickley in there. I'm at the point where I had no problem with Burks starting because Quickley's closing the game. So
played 31
perfect
minutes.
World. Right. In a perfect world, you have Quickley starting, playing a lot of the middle, and then finishing the game. But it's the sort of thing where if Quickley's out there when it matters most and he's defending Trae Young and Trae Young scores 2 points right in the fourth quarter and it's basically a garbage time bucket, then I'm totally fine with it. We know how he impacted the game even without making shots. He went 4 of 12 from the field. Didn't shoot great. I think it was 1 of 7 from three. It didn't even matter because the way he orchestrated the offense, he played with pace, weaving in and out of the defense when he had the ball in his hands. It was fantastic. Play pick and roll. beautiful pass to Quentin Grimes. My God.
Yeah.
I mean, like that sort of mindset, you want that type of player. And again, at this point, that's just not necessarily who Kemba is. He's a rotation player, but he's not necessarily a let's start with him. And there's a reason he's not closing, because Tibbs understands he's not the best player. He's not even the best point guard. He's not second best point guard. Probably not even maybe the third best point guard. Although, no, he's probably viewed as the third best point guard, or the third best point guard, assuming Burks is not considered a point guard.
I was about to say, like,
regardless, yeah,
Burks was the starting point guard.
But Burks is not really a point guard, but it worked. Whatever happened last night, it certainly worked.
Yeah.
Knicks basketball is finally back, and there's no need to exhaust yourself searching all over the internet for Knicks tickets anymore, because TickPick, that's TickPick, is the original no-fee ticket site and the only one you'll ever need as your go-to for all NBA tickets. TickPick got rid of all those awful service fees that all other sites charge, which lets them guarantee the best prices on all their NBA tickets. Don't believe it? If you could find better prices for the same seats on another ticket site, TickPick will give you 110% of the difference in the purchase price. When the Knicks schedule came out, there are definitely certain dates we all circled on the calendar. October 20th against the Celtics, Christmas Day against the Hawks, January 12th against the Mavericks, even April 6th against Brooklyn. Whether on the road or in the garden, TickPick has you covered. Visit TickPick.com/filmschool today to save $10 on your first order of Knicks tickets. That's TickPick.com/filmschool to save $10 on your first order of Knicks tickets today.
Here's the thing. Like, if we zoom out, I know lineup decisions and rotation decisions and organizational decisions generally should not be made based on money, but they are. And that's the reality of the situation. And Julius Randle is owed $120 million over the next 4 years. And I can't believe we have to say that sentence with that tone and with that connotation, right? I still believe that can be a value contract in the league at large, because we've seen enough from Julius to know he is worth the money and then some. The notion that like they're going to bench Julius Randle, or they're like, I don't know what, ship Julius, like, just get that out of your heads. It's not going to happen. They need to figure out how to get Julius Randle right. And I think the solution is to put him in a situation where he is just able to do what he feels most comfortable doing. I agree that is not happening with Kemba on the floor. Now, he didn't look terribly comfortable last night, but I agree with you. The offense did look better with Burks in Walker's place. And I thought the offense looked pretty good throughout other stretches of the game where Julius just wasn't really the focus. And he was more of a garbage man, cleaning up, you know, offensive rebounds, being like the role guy. Like, I think there's a world, there's this kind of in-between world that we've been talking about, it seems like, for 6 weeks. They haven't really found yet. But I don't know. I agree with you. I think Burks, if they're going to make a change, I think Burks is the most likely starting candidate. At the same time, doesn't that mean Kemba is like out of the rotation altogether? Because you're not going to have Kemba, Rose, and Quickly off the bench.
Right.
So by that token, maybe it is Quickly, but and people are going to be mad at me for this. Like, there's a part of me that likes Quickly off the bench. You know, I made a comp on the post game the other night to Jason Terry during the Mavs years. And like, Jason Terry was a bench player for like 3-4 of those years when the Mavs were a contender. They won one championship. He was averaging over 30 minutes a game. It was basically just a way to stagger him and Dirk because they were the two most effective offensive players on the team. So like, yes, you obviously with like more typical like star players, you could stagger while both guys are in the starting lineup. You know, Tibbs doesn't necessarily like to do that. He likes to run his units out there for a while, which is why, you know, Derrick Rose got here last year. He was obviously, if not the best player on the team, second best player on the team, whatever, certainly the best point guard. He stayed coming off the bench, averaged over 25 minutes a game. I don't know. I would not be shocked if Rose maybe got a starting nod at some point. That, to me, feels like a way. And then, I don't know, Kemba and Quickly, is that a lineup we want to see together? I don't know. I just, for as great as the Hawks win felt, I still feel like we're in this place where there's no obvious answer to this issue. And I don't know. If you had to guess right now, what do you think would happen like moving forward? Do you think we're going to get a change?
I think we're only going to get a change if there's a legitimate personnel change.
Like a trade.
Yes.
Okay.
And, but I agree. Listen, I think that you can, it's very possible to say Quickly is a high impact player and also say it's totally fine with him being in the role that he's currently in. You know, look, if, like I said, if he's closing games, that's what I really care about. I don't really care who's starting. As long as you're getting significant minutes and Quickly has trended up that way, would I like more? Sure. I'd like a few more minutes, of course. But I mean, you said what? He played 31 minutes last night?
31. Yeah. I think it was, if not a career high, it was like right there with a career high.
Right. So that's great. I love it. I'd love to see him maybe, you know, averaging at least 28 minutes. I think we as fans, a lot of times we kind of just like want a player just keep playing and, you know, score up to, you know, 32 until there's a breaking point where it's law of diminishing returns. Like sometimes it's too many minutes and it's not enough minutes. It's, as Tibbs said, he's kind of in an impossible situation. And I get that. I see where he's coming from, but I also like the fact that Quickly and Obi play a lot together. And if you start Quickly, then you're probably not going to stagger him with Obi nearly as much as you are. So if the two of them have a great connection and it's working for each of them, then playing them at their strengths and beating up on second units, that is still influential. I think it's just the idea of him not starting is upsetting to some. And I hear that, but I also just feel like he's in a role that's working for him and that's okay. We can say that he's excelling in what he's doing and focus on that. But in terms of Randall, you know, it's a sort of thing where it's just funny to me because Randall is a second option on a really good team and he's paid like a second option, as you're saying with that contract. I mean, again, how many first options are making max money?
All of them, right?
Pretty much all of them, unless they're on a rookie contract.
Yeah.
Randall isn't doing that. He's probably going to make $10 to $11 million less than what he would be eligible for if he hit the open market and got a max. So the Knicks are very aware that he is not on this big max contract. And so it's the sort of thing where when Randall's a second option, he has to play like a first option because the Knicks don't have one. And it seems like when he has to play like one, it usually doesn't work out. And the Knicks are upset. Knicks fans are upset because of the fact that he's not succeeding as a first option. He's a second option. And then when he plays like a second option, but no one else steps up to be a first option, then it's like, well, Randall can't really do this. Why isn't he scoring more? And it just feels like he's in no man's land. It feels like unless he is that all NBA talent where he is just elite and he looks like a first option, that it's basically like, well, what are we doing here? Why are we committing to Randall? Ship him out. And again, like you said, the Knicks aren't going to move Julius Randle. They locked into him because they believe in him. There is no situation where the Knicks are going to say, hey, let's pay you. And then a year later, let's move you. This isn't a Blake Griffin thing because Blake Griffin was also a much different player by that point. This is, we know that you're a very good player and we want to get you the help that you need. And they're working on it. It's a work in progress, right? It's not going to happen overnight. It's really hard to get elite first options in your building. It's nearly impossible, but you can, as time goes on, find a way to make that happen. But right now, as I said last week, it's that teenage phase. It's awkward. It's clunky. It's just gross, but it can work out. And that's the thing. It's just other guys have to step up. And last night we saw other players step up. It's if we rally around the whole thing of a big 15 last year, I think we have to keep that similar mindset of everyone has to pitch in and do their part. And then Randall can succeed. But when he's a first option and it's not going well, of course it's not. He's not supposed to be a first option, and yet he has no choice.
I agree with you.
But it's funny. I can't help but say that when he checked in for the Lakers game at the end, people were groaning and I felt similarly. It was like the ball is sticking in your hands. Things don't flow as freely. It just feels like things stop. And so I completely understand with the style and with the level of play and how sometimes there's the lack of effort. I hear all of that. And that's a problem, but that's not a talent problem per se. The talent is there. It's just a matter of maximizing that talent. And it just feels like, you know, 20 games into the season, what we're seeing is that the talent around him might not maximize him. RJ's struggling. Fournier up until recently was not great. Kemba, we're talking about the fact that he's not, you know, really supposed to be doing much because of the fact that he's just not doing much. Mitch is a very low usage player. If you put Noel on there instead, same thing. So it's like, again, it falls on his shoulders and it's not fun to watch, but you know, I mean, I was sitting next to a fan at the Lakers game, and with all due respect to him, he was saying, like, you know, get this bum out of here. And I'm just thinking, like, again, he's just a miscast player. I think if you have him in a more optimal situation, one that is better tailored to his strengths, which you can get there, it'll take a little time, then it works out. But he's not a bum. He's a second option.
He's not a bum. He is the best, despite his numbers this year. He's the best tough shot maker on the Knicks. And unless you want to be like, well, 30 footers are pretty tough to make, and Emmanuel quickly makes a lot of those. Yes. But you know what I mean when I say tough shot maker. I mean, like, defense is bearing down. There's a hand in your face. I know it seems like he's missed a lot of them. He has taken a ton of them. And the fact that he's taken a ton of them and made it, you know, enough to remind you of what he was last year, that has value. He's still in, I think, somewhere in there, the numbers may not show this, an elite finisher at the rim. There was a place for Julius Randle on a really good team. I am convinced of that. Where I'm going to push back on you a little bit, and then we'll move on to our game ball and detention, is in two things. One, I think on a team with, I agree, quickly, Rose, Burks, RJ, who's been struggling, Fournier, like, none of these guys are first options. Obviously, none of these guys are first options, but they're all pretty good, and they could all do stuff with the ball. They could all create a little bit. Obi Toppin is in his own kind of category. Even Kemba Walker, I should throw Kemba Walker into that category, into this first category too. These guys could all do stuff, and it feels like, I think when fans are looking at those possessions where Julius gets the ball and it's dribble, 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 pound, 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 and then, you know, whatever's going to happen, it's like, other guys, when that's happening, are kind of just waiting. It's like, okay, well, Julius is either going to shoot or he's going to draw the double, and I'm going to get the ball and I'm going to shoot. And that creates stagnancy, and there's not that much flow. And I think when you compare those moments to the moments that we see the backup units play, especially where all it is flow and energy and like passing and the whole thing and movement, that's where the stark contrast comes in. And it's like, you know, that's why I think most people look at those possessions as like not great possessions and possessions that need to go away. I think there's still a place for those possessions. I do think they need to decrease. And the second thing I'm going to push back on, and I thought it was a brilliant point bringing up Blake Griffin. I think that's a really interesting comp. And I'm not going to say the Knicks are going to ship him to, I don't know, what's the NBA version of Detroit now? Well, probably Detroit.
I was going to say, probably still Detroit.
I Detroit's not going to trade for Blake Griffin right now. I'm trying to think of a team that would, like a shitty team that would actually trade for, or sorry, Julius Randle. I'm trying to think of a shitty team that would actually trade for Julius Randle right now.
How about San Antonio?
I don't think
team they, that wants, they really? No, it's, I'm just saying, you know,
Sacramento. I mean, Sacramento, sure, would trade for Julius Randle, and who would be the Tobias Harris coming back in that day? They're not giving up. They're not giving up De'Aaron Fox or Tyrese Halliburton. Like,
you're basically looking at someone like Harrison Barnes, maybe a Buddy Hield type player. But again,
that's the trade, right? I think it would be like Harrison Barnes, right? Like Harrison Barnes coming back for Julius Randle. Maybe it's not perfect apples to apples, but like to the Blake Tobias Harris trade, but like something like that. I mean, Leon Rose and has built this whole thing on culture, 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 and family, and Kentucky and CAA and the whole thing. Like, it doesn't feel like they do that, but man, that was a trade that set up everything the Clippers accomplished afterwards. And I'm still a fan of what the Clippers accomplished afterwards, despite the fact that they still haven't won anything yet. I don't know. I just thought it was an interesting point you brought up that you dismissed a little bit quickly.
Well, it's more the idea. Well, I guess for the first thing, again, I'm not disagreeing in the sense that when the ball sticks in Julius's hands and people are kind of waiting around to see, are you going to shoot it? Are you going to, you know, draw a double team and then kick it out? That's infuriating for us as much as it probably is for them. That does need to change. I want to make that clear. But in terms of the second point, it's more that I think the issue with the Blake Griffin trade in terms of with the Knicks is that it's more like the Knicks would rather trade again, it's crazy we're even talking about this because of the fact that they just locked him in and he hasn't even started his next contract.
But so did the Clippers. They had the fucking jersey retirement to get him to
sign. I know there. Where they had like Martin Luther King Jr. on, exactly. on shirts, and you know, you can be an icon sort of thing. Look, it's a business.
But like if the Clippers could do that, anyone could trade anyone, you know?
100%. But I guess the greater point is that for the immediate future, the Knicks are building around Julius Randle. That doesn't mean he is going to be built around forever. It doesn't mean he can't be traded and he's got this no trade clause, which he doesn't. It's just a matter of right now, you don't just ship him off. The big thing about Randle, and it's always been this case where if the day came where the Knicks were supposed to do something with Randle, it would be you package him and other things for a better player. It's that philosophy. It's not like just ship him out and trade him because you're then taking a step back if you're getting a Tobias Harris type, right? I mean, then the Clippers still traded Tobias Harris to the Sixers. So
yes, but a key difference here, there's no 2019 free agency coming up this summer where you're moving Randall's salary to free up money.
Right. And we look at the star market consistently. That's what we do. And there's no one on the horizon as well. And it works out perfectly fine because the Knicks aren't going to trade Julius Randle in the short term anyway. Maybe the long term, who knows? I really don't. But it's the sort of thing where you lock into a player that you are confident you can keep, and they did, and that you can maintain. And if the day comes where you have a better offer on the table, then by all means. But until then, you're building around Julius Randle. And if you optimize him the right way, then things can go better.
It's not going to happen this year. I agree with you. I just thought it was a very interesting comp that you wrote up that I honestly had not thought of yet.
It was more the idea of trading a player basically as soon as you can in term after you've signed him, not period, because we've seen teams say loyalty's great, but this is still business, and it is. Yeah. But right now, probably next year, it's not the right time.
Yeah. We'll see what happens. Okay. Game ball. So someone that we want to highlight or give credit to this week for their performance. As always, thank you to Andrew Claudio for giving us a very nice list of nominees. I always feel like I have to pivot to like something that's not obvious because I always feel like there is an obvious name or two. I'm gonna go with the obvious name. I'm gonna take Alec Burks. So I will leave you to choose from one of the more fun options. What can you say about Alec Burks? They don't win the Laker game without him. They don't win, obviously, the Hawks game without him. There's a reason why I ultimately sided with, if I can only pick Burks or Reggie Bullock in the offseason, I picked Burks because I think offensive versatility is more important in the league today than defensive versatility. And by the way, I got a DM late last night from someone, I'm not going to say who, but someone who watches a lot of Mavericks basketball, basically saying Reggie Bullock sucks. And
I think I have an idea, but yeah.
Again, not saying anybody. And that he has not been great on defense this year. And on offense, he's shooting under 30% from three. All due respect to Tibbs, who allegedly wanted to keep Reggie Bullock. I'm not saying at the expense of Alec Burks, but and I get that. If you're a coach, why wouldn't you want a Reggie Bullock on your team? But Alec Burks there just aren't a ton of players in the league who can just, they don't need to ramp up. You just put them in the game and it's like, they're going to be what they're going to be. And Reggie Bullock does not need a runway. He doesn't need anybody to create for him. He creates on his own. He could run point. He plays decent defense. He's reliable, big shot maker, the whole thing. Game ball to, of course, Alec Burks.
Sorry. I just happened to look down at my phone. Enes Kanter is changing his name to Enes Kanter Freedom.
Oh, come now.
Anyways, once a Nick, always a Nick. Sorry, in terms of Alec Burks, I think what you're saying.
Give me a game ball to Enes Kanter. I think that's the only appropriate answer here.
The thing about Alec Burks, and I guess the Knicks as a whole, right? Like you could say the Hawks missed open shots. They were playing without DeAndre Hunter. They were primarily without Bogdanovich. I don't really care. If I were Bogdanovich and DeAndre Hunter, I would simply not get injured. Just a thought. No, but the big thing here is that the biggest issue with the Knicks going into the playoffs last year was they had two starting guards who had no creation ability and shooting ability, right? And now you go in there and you've got Alec Burks. You've got Emmanuel Quickley, a year older and better, right? You don't even have Derrick Rose, who was a key component to what you were doing. Mm-hmm. And you're thriving that way because you're creating more offense than you did or you were able to. And even again, if Randall's struggling, you finally have players that can say, we'll pick you up, as opposed to Randall struggling. Okay, Derek, we absolutely need you to be the best version of yourself as possible. Reggie Bullock, we need you to create. Oh, you can't necessarily do that. And you're traveling in transition. And now like that is the microcosm of everything that's going on and why this series is going to be gone. All of these little things. And it's just nice to see other players like Alec Burks pick the Knicks up. And that I think is a key element that they missed and why they were able to be successful last night and hopefully why they can be successful moving forward. So I think Alec Burks is a great choice. Some of the other players on the list that Andrew has, Emmanuel Quickley, Obi Toppin, the young guys. I mean, they're both young guys, but the even younger guys of the 2021 draft class. Of
shout out Jericho Sims and Quentin Grimes.
And, you know, shout out Walt Perrin and Leon Rose for hiring Walt Perrin. Incredible stuff in the development team. And then Andrew, of course, put himself because he took RJ Barrett under 14 and a half points last night.
Long live the reverse jinx.
Yes, indeed. But I'm going to go with someone else with getting the game ball. I'm going to give the game ball to me because I believed in Evan Fournier, who I'm really giving the game ball to. I went on a limb, did a whole cap or no cap last week about why Evan Fournier, just give him time, what he brings to the table. And I mean, he delivered point blank. Again, I could pick any of these players and I think it'd be warranted, but at least with Fournier, look, two of the three games, which were wins, he did great. I know you had a stat about how when it's what, more than 15 points?
He's basically his points? The Knicks have not lost in his seven highest scoring games of the season. It's 18 or more.
Right. And that's not a coincidence. No. When he gets going, when he's, you know, like we saw him attacking the rim a little bit more, which is great. We saw him making cuts and playing better off ball. Did he hit some really impressive shots that maybe your average player wouldn't hit? Sure. But
he can do that.
An above average player. That's what he does.
He can make tough shots. Yeah,
exactly. So, I mean, you know, the Knicks have four players in the top 25 for pull up three percentage of players who've taken at least 35 of them. Fournier is, I think, the second. He's second at the top with Alec Burks being the first. Mm. So, you know, it's first of the four Knicks. So it's the sort of thing where he just needs the ability to do more with the ball. And when he does, good things can happen. They won't happen all the time, but it's the sort of thing where he's able to impress when you give him the opportunity, when he takes the opportunity. And we're seeing that as well. So I'm going to give the game ball to him.
It's a really good pick. And I haven't yet decided who is going to get my game balls for the weekend for Monday's newsletter. And I have a feeling that Fournier is probably going to get left out in the cold. And that's messed up because like we take him hitting shots, I think, for granted. I think as a fan base, we've all taken him hitting shots, tough shots, big threes for granted this season. Like this dude has not been a terrible player. Nope. You know, and if you think like, oh, he's getting, you know, paid so much money, like he's making, you know, in the, like, here are the players who are making about as much as him this year: Miles Turner, Ricky Rubio, Caris LeVert, Jonathan Isaac, who's not even playing right now, like Joe Harris, Spencer Dinwiddie, Steven Adams, Markelle Fultz, Aaron Gordon's pretty good, but he's also just got a nice extension. You know, it's like, has he lived up to some of those names? No. But at the same time, I think he's done well enough that I don't think the Knicks should feel bad about what they gave him. Detention. Oh, goodness gracious.
This is a tough one for me too.
It's tough. I mean, we just opened the whole show talking about Kemba and what Kemba's not doing and the Julius Randle of it all. Can I put both of them in detention at once?
Sure.
I'm going to give it to both Julius and Kemba, and I'm giving it to both of them because for two reasons. One, I don't think anyone deserves their own detention after this week. And I don't want to make anybody feel like they have earned a whole detention. But I think each of those guys have earned half a detention because each of those guys did not like it has to take it upon themselves to figure out why they are in the midst of the absolute dregs of the league in terms of combined net rating when they play together. And the fact that we are now 20 games in and those two guys have not figured out how to amplify each other's games. And to the point where it has become obvious. And I don't honestly at this point, for as much as we could talk about which direction they go moving forward and how to solve this, what can't be denied is neither it has been a problem thus far. And it is a problem that is not just on Kemba Walker. It's not just on Julius Randle. It's on both of them. So I'm going to give them a combined detention. Figure it out, guys, because if you can't figure it out, then like someone's going to be left out in the cold, if not both players somehow. I know you don't think Julius Randle is going to get traded this year, but like, you know, again, life comes at you fast. And then Leon Rose is not going to sit around just fucking waiting for this thing to sort itself out.
Well, I think it's pretty obvious where if that pairing doesn't wind up working out, who gets the short end of the stick?
Yes.
It's going to be the guy who's 31 years old on a much smaller contract who was not invested in by the Knicks.
By the way, I remember when he signed that contract, we didn't really care that if it was a team option or a player option or whatever, but like it's I believe it's no option was the final reporting on mm-hmm. that
straight to
you know, interesting at this point. I wonder how that would affect things if that second year was a player option.
I mean, it's the sort of thing where the 2 years make sense because it lined up perfectly with his contract. But I'm not saying they
deserve blame for like inking him to 2 years. I wonder how it would be different if they didn't sign him for two full years. That's all.
I will say this though, the perfectly fine thing about having him under contract guaranteed is that if you get to the point where you move him, if it were a 1 year deal and you wanted to move him, you'd have to move him by the deadline. But now it's like, okay, there's the deadline. There's the draft, there's free agency.
Yeah.
You have that ability. And I'm sure that is why the Knicks didn't say, look, I mean, they're going to operate above the cap. So using his salary and whatever you want, if it's going to be this summer, then that is exactly what you want, right? If there's a sign and trade situation, if you're just moving him for another player, it all works because you can have that flexibility and that team control. That's what the Cavs basically did when Brock Aller was there. They signed players to long-term contracts so they could move them if they wanted to. This isn't a long-term contract, but it gives them more flexibility to do what they want. This is going to be bad podcasting, but I have no choice but to agree with you in terms of it being Randle and Walker because
this is bad podcasting. Well, only bad podcast hosts.
That's true. And here we are. You know, again, like Knicks went 2-1 and they played some of their best basketball, I thought, this week compared to what we've seen. And you know, pretty sure I blamed Tibbs last week. I'm not going to do that. I thought he was far better, but he was also forced in some ways to do that. But regardless, he made the decisions. I'm not going to critique him for that. I think he did a great job this week. And then you look at the other players and who's available. And in terms of who didn't play well, like we could talk about RJ, where short of one game, they did well. His slump certainly continued. So, all right, you know, maybe I'll say RJ as well, so we can get a little bit of mixture going flavor. On here. I mean, he's been terrible. I don't know how else to say it. Just flat out egregious, but it's the sort of thing where it's similar to Fournier. And I say similar, not the same, because of the fact that Fournier has a much stronger track record in terms of like he didn't just forget how to play basketball. We know that he's a good player. He's figuring it out, slumping, and it seems like he's hopefully coming out of that. With RJ, hopefully it's similar, but you know, I mean, this isn't the stretch that he went through last year. This is much worse, but I still would bet on RJ Barrett. I think, you know, just saying that maybe this isn't the player and we've seen shades of someone who can be really good. that's fine. I think that it's just, he's going through something. Hopefully he snaps out of it. It's a very bizarre step backwards, but I don't want to say it happens because it doesn't always happen to players, but it's a sort of thing where he's just struggling and you hope that, you know, each game he figures it out a little bit, builds some more confidence and snaps back to what he's doing. Was it on purpose, or I guess was it possible that Kemba Walker not being in the game helped RJ Barrett play better? Maybe. I don't really know. I'm not prepared to say that Kemba Walker is the reason why RJ Barrett is holding being held back. I think RJ is holding RJ back. But he did seemingly fine without Kemba. The world went on as planned. Hopefully RJ can continue with that, but it's something to keep an eye on, where if maybe it's just he's not really fitting in and he doesn't like the fact that he's being relegated to a spot up shooter in a lot of ways, but he's also missing easy bunnies and
yeah, it hasn't just been the spot.
It's not just Kemba. I think
it's fair you throw RJ in there as well. Again, had a nice game against the Hawks. And also we should clarify or specify, other than a little blip midway through the season, RJ's defense has still largely been very good. And he's, you know, he's not like dogging it or anything. He's helping the team win games in other ways. And then the last thing before we make our predictions, you know, we focused a lot in this episode on offense and how the offense can get better and what are the issues on offense. The thing that certainly can't be denied with last night's performance is that without Kemba Walker on the floor, this team is just, it's night and day difference in terms of defense. We kind of take that for granted. I've taken it for granted because I never thought the defense was going to be a problem. Sure enough, over their last 10 games, the Knicks are a top 10 defense. I think the defense will be okay. But just throwing that out there, which is a perfect transition too. Whether we think the Knicks have actually really figured things out or whether this is still going to be a bit of a slog until, as you alluded to earlier, perhaps roster changes are made. Predictions. So this week, Knicks are going into Brooklyn. To face the Nets on Tuesday. And then they have two home games. Home games against the Chicago Bulls, who are a little bit up and down of late. More than they have been to begin the year. And then the Nuggets at home on Saturday. Nikola Jokic is back and healthy, but Denver has also had a bit of an up and down year, even with Jokic in the lineup. Michael Porter Jr. remains out with a back injury. They're obviously still missing Jamal Murray.
TJ Dozier went down.
TJ Dozier went down, who's been playing important minutes for them. So an interesting week. Do I want to be bold and optimistic, or do I want to be dour? I am going to take a page from your book last week and hope that I am wrong. And I'm going to go with 1-2.
I thought you were going to take 2-1.
Did you?
I really did. I thought you were going to be optimistic and say, you know what? I'm feeling good about my first win of the season. And, I think 1-2 is a very sensible choice, but I'm going to go 2-1. I mean, I'm not going to go 3-0. I'm not going to go 0-3. So 2-1 makes sense. You know, I'm just talking it through. I think the Nets game, that's going to be a tough one, 100%. But with the Bulls, you know, it's been close. And both those games are in Chicago, although the Knicks have not been good at home. And then Denver still is somewhat depleted. Very curious how the Knicks handle that. But we said it and it still is just mind boggling to me, but the fact that the Knicks are in the 93rd percentile defensively when Julius is on the floor and Kemba Walker is off the floor, that's just nuts. That's just crazy stuff. But,
bonus prediction. Yeah. What should I set the number at? Over under 23.5 minutes per game that Kemba Walker averages. This week.
Ooh. What is he at right now, John?
He's over that number for sure. I'll look it up right now. But yeah, he's definitely over that number.
I'm going to say over because I think old habits die hard. But again, okay. There's it's a small sample size of the game against the Hawks, but it's A good one.
24 and 24 and a half.
Okay.
He's out right now.
So, well, in that case, I mean, man, that's a really good number to set. Cause I mean, that's basically where he's at right now.
You'll say over. Okay.
But now that I know it's only 24 and a half, and again, it depends on Rose. I think that's a big factor too. If Rose is still out, then it kind of changes everything, because then you're probably going to lean a little bit more on Kemba than you might beforehand. So I'm going to say Rose comes back. The Knicks don't have a game until Tuesday or Monday.
Tuesday. Yeah. They have two games off.
Now. Tuesday. So that will mean Rose will have gotten over a week's worth off.
And he was doing some warm-ups and stuff before the game in Atlanta, which, like, who the hell knows? He's older, right. So I don't know what that's going to look like. But
I'm going to say Rose comes back, and if Rose is coming back, I'm going to switch my answer to Kemba playing under 23.5 by just a bit.
I will
2.5.
I will go under, and I will just say we're talking about this team right now after the 20-game mark. I think by the 40-game mark, this Kemba Walker situation will have resolved itself, either by him playing better, the starting unit playing better, him being sent to the bench, him being traded, him being something. And he can be traded as of, I believe, December 19th. So we're inching up. 15th. December 15th.
Yeah.
We're inching up on that date. Okay. I have to go because I have a wife who needs me to watch some children right now. I just want to thank you one more time, Jeremy, for coming on here during a week where you certainly had every excuse to tap out. But you are a champ. And anything you want to plug or promote before you get out of here?
Just tell the people you love that you love them, because you just never know when the last time will be. So that's all I ask for those of you listening. Just give someone a hug, give them a call, whatever it is. So yeah,
amen to that. You're a wise man, Jeremy Cohen.
Your grandfather
did well. All right. And everybody out there, thank you for listening to another episode of the Knicks Film School Podcast. We'll be back with you for more fun and games very soon. Take care.